Everybody, welcome to Out and About. This is Captain DJ Mave. We're experiencing some problems here in the studio. I'm not able to play the opening music, nor will I be playing any of the songs that I promised you. So that's the way it goes. Anyway, Welcome to Out and About. You are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. Again, I don't know what's going on here. I know we had a little problem switching over from the live broadcast, but we thought we fixed that. But I think it might be on my computer's end. I don't know. Anyway, welcome, welcome, welcome. You know, we're going to be talking a lot today anyways, because, you know, I have my friend Matt Danielson here, who is the executive director of Spokane Pride. Hi, Matt.
Hello.
Yeah, it should be. Say hello again.
Hello.
Yeah.
Okay, I just don't hear much in my headphones.
Can you hear yourself now?
I can hear you better now.
Huh.
Oh, well.
You know what? Actually, you're not coming through that mic very good. Why? Yeah, switch over to microphone 4.
Check.
Oh, shoot. Because I had the wrong mic turned on. Sorry. You can go back to microphone 3. Okay.
Yes, ma'am. Oh, wow. There we go.
There we go. Okay.
That.
You throw a little monkey wrench at me and start crumbling pretty quickly.
It's okay. We're a little bit of a mess today. Me and Maeve were already talking about that.
We are a little bit of a mess today. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about stuff going on with Spokane Pride, too.
We're going to talk about what's going on with Spokane Pride 2 today, too. This is crazy. All right. So I think we're dialed in. Who knows? Maybe my music will start working again pretty soon. But I think I mentioned that you're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane. Again, apologies, no music. But I want to ask you, how did the murder mystery event go?
It was pretty fun. We had two nights of it and two different killers.
Oh,
and,
good.
Probably about 80 people totally participating, and you know, just a lot of me running around the room lying to people. It was great.
Yes, that sounds like fun. I'm sorry I wasn't able to make it. What's the next big events that we have going on?
So actually, the next event is the day after tomorrow, because it's Thanksgiving, and I wasn't really super in the mood to go home to my family and, you know, the mountains this year. So I figured if I'm feeling that way, there's probably a lot more people that feel that way as well.
Yeah.
So we're opening up the Sand Pride Center from 11 to 6, and there's going to be a whole bunch of food. I was just like talking about details. Apparently we have 4 turkeys.
Wow.
And a bunch of other stuff. It's going to be just great. So
I'll be back in the break room back there.
Yeah, it's probably going to be all over the place. I think we're probably going to have food on my desk. It's going to be really lovely and awkward.
Good.
And
what's going to be on the TV? Parade?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't thought that far ahead. I'll probably just be talking to people about my feelings like usual.
Yes.
And then eating too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what this is quite going to look like, but if you are wanting to get connected to the community on, you know, the actual day of Thanksgiving, and come down to the Sand Pride Center, and we'll feed you and, you know, offer you a little bit of community.
Oh, that sounds just plain lovely, plain lovely. Now, you know, we're going to talk about the election because, you know, being members of the LGBTQ+ community, you know, we're going to be affected by this. Mm-hmm. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the one thing is we're all, you know, we always kind of rely upon that we live in Washington State, which is very much a progressive state and a very free state, that we think we're going to be safe. But now that we've seen with the Supreme Court basically granting the president king-like powers, and when they pass national laws, there'll be probably no chance for the state to actually fight those laws, I would think.
I don't know. I'm hoping it's kind of like the last one where our attorney general and governor had a lot of fun suing the federal government. So
yeah, they did.
I'm hoping for that, just to at least keep things safe and sane on this side of the border.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. But, you know, I think people who think, oh, it's just like we survived. That's what I've hated the worst. When people say, oh, we've survived the last time. It's like, well, this is a lot different. because the Supreme Court decisions and actually him having both the House and the Senate makes things different.
Yeah, it most definitely does. But I mean, these are all opinions, not on behalf of Spokane Pride, but on behalf of Matthew as an individual.
Yeah. Same with me and KYS. Yeah.
But honestly, I think they're probably going to overreach and they're going to turn the moderates against them. I honestly, at least that's what I'm telling myself lying awake at night.
Yeah.
And it'll swing back the other way pretty hard. And I think we'll be right there waiting, ready with an organized community, because if there is something that this is going to cause, it's going to cause us to organize a lot better.
Yeah. That's always the good thing. You know, that's besides like oddball stuff, like weird stuff that happens, you know, out of the blue, these unforeseen things that happen. I forgot what the term is, but basically not unforeseen circumstances, but consequences that happen after something like this. There's also just the way that things play out, and they are pretty incompetent, and he's surrounding himself with incompetent, mean people, and not just mean as far as like their temperament, just not good. I hold a lot of hope for that. But then there's also good things that come out of it. Like you said, organizing more. You know, when the Supreme Court made it a national right to work country for public employees, like for state, for firefighters, we were really worried. Well, when Scalia died, that we thought, well, that's going to give us a pass when this thing comes. Well, then, of course, you know, the whole thing happened with Merrick Garland, and we, you know, that, so he didn't get on board. And so they wound up passing this anyway. And the union, we decided that we were going to take this as an opportunity to connect more with our members and to have more informational sessions instead of people just signing off on being part of the union. It's like, well, here's why you want to be a part of the union, because the right to work laws basically say that you can, the union has to represent you. But you don't have to pay union dues if you don't want to. So that's, you know, in fact, I still get postcards from, I think, the Freedom Foundation that asks me to quit my union. You know, they tell you like you could have an extra $3,000. So, but anyway, just saying that it did allow us to connect more with the community.
Well, I think there's going to be a similar thing with all of our lovely LGBTQ+ community organizations.
Yeah.
I think this shows that we have a lot of coordinating to do and a lot of like, I don't know. We just need to get together. We need to create new community institutions and new groups and different ways of being together and different ways of organizing our community. And I think there's going to be a lot of cool fringe benefits that come along with that, and that like, it'll make people feel more connected to their community because we're going to, I mean, I was joking about this kind of half serious, kind of half not, but the proceeding days from the election, we opened up our community room at the center and had people, you know, just show up, and there was basically people crying. There was people angry. There was everything in between, but we basically created a new pride support group. I called it.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
And 300 people shared the posts about it, including the mayor.
Wow.
And I thought, you know, there's a lot of people wanting to get engaged and do stuff. And I think it's my job and our job as a community to give people a place to volunteer, give people a place to like do something.
Yeah. I hope that we also, because we're going to have a lot of company of persecuted people. And I think there's going to be the opportunity to maybe help people outside our community too. And I think sometimes we find a lot of strength when we fight for other marginalized groups, you know, like I think like the BLM marches, I remember that being a really pride kind of being in that too. And, and you know, I always feel like we need to flex our muscle for everybody.
Well, I think we need to unify as the, you know, others basically in our culture, because if we can coordinate all those voices, we clearly have the majority. So
yeah,
we just need to organize, which is kind of the problem.
Like we always want to call the Pride Festival, well, the Kindness Festival. Maybe just intelligent and kind people organize, you know. It was, you know, for me, I think, I don't know about how it was for you, the biggest, it wasn't so much that he was elected. It was, barring any kind of campaign misdeeds, and this really truly was how people voted, America wasn't what I thought it was.
That's kind of where I land too. It's just the community that you're living in isn't quite, I want to say as loving as I thought, but I like to think that there's love there. It's just misplaced by some really insidious marketing on, you know, some campaigns. And honestly, I think we had some marketing issues of ourselves as lefties and not giving a positive vision specifically and to fight back from the, we'll just make everything better.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know.
It's all water under the bridge, I suppose.
It's all above my head.
Yeah. And for me, it was like, well, all they had to do was to say, really, if you were honest where you were 4 years ago in the middle of a pandemic, things are much better for you. Mm-hmm. And also, this guy destroyed the economy. So you're willing to surrender your rights in order for him to destroy the economy again. It made no sense at all to me. And I think that was the biggest thing is, you know, either people do want to see destruction of what we have. They think they're watching a train wreck, not knowing they're on the train, you know, but for some reason they think it's entertaining or what, but there are real lives in the balance and people's jobs on the balance and all of that. So anyways, for me, it was like, this is not the America I thought it was.
I mean, true, but then it's something I tell myself to not be too cynical about my neighbors, but it was a rebellion against the status quo, really. I mean, mm-hmm. I think there was only one incumbent elected in the entire world out of all the guys. Wow. Like, this is a change.
Yeah.
This is a change election. People are not happy with the way things are. And I mean, I get it from a quantitative point of view because, I mean, Biden did inherit the inflation that kind of came along with pandemic recovery.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, people are just seeing prices change and they're listening to one side be a little garbled and the other side say they're going to make everything better. It's not super surprising that people, you know, just went with the side that said they're going to, with the uncomplicated message saying, because, you know, us lovely little lefties try to make things complicated, talk about programs, talk about policy, and sometimes the message gets lost.
Well, that was also the sane washing aspect of this thing too, where, Donald Trump would go just say the most ridiculous, crazy things and not have, like, even in the debate, you know, well, I have the concept of a plan for healthcare, you know? So, but they won't mention him saying crazy stuff. The media will say, well, the president former President Trump talked about the economy, but you know, Vice President Harris was really very vague. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's like, oh my gosh, he just said crazy stuff. He just said like nutty, nutty things. And you're like saying, six of one, half dozen of the other, because they need it to be a horse race because it keeps us clicking. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the first, you know, and that's, you know, that's a business model.
Well, not all talk radio and news is as nuanced and, you know, fair as us.
Well, that's true. That's true. But you know, first thing I did was I took, all my, news sources off of my computer bookmarks. So I'm not tempted to click and doom scroll.
Oh,
and it's going to be really hard, but I figure I'm going to listen. I'm going to watch and listen to the BBC and the CBC. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm getting a shortwave radio to listen to. So I'm serious. I asked for one for Christmas.
And she's moving to the woods.
No, I'm not doing that. I'm not moving. I'm not going anywhere.
By that, I mean the South Hill.
I'm not going anywhere. But I do feel like the corporate news media's job is not to tell you the news, it's to make money.
Correct.
We forget about that, you know?
No, it is kind of a race to the bottom as far as, you know, the incentive structures for, you know, the fourth estate.
Yeah.
Because I do think an essential part of a democracy, I mean, they even call the media the fourth branch of government. It's not officially a branch of government, but how can one have a democracy without an informed populace?
You can't. You can't.
I have a funny story about the debate, actually.
Okay, hold that thought.
Oh, please.
Hold that thought, because I got to do my 20-minute after the hour business, okay?
Yes.
Are you okay?
And
that'll keep people listening, because you have everybody stay tuned, because there's going to be a good story. Now, I don't want to build it up. I don't want to put a lot of pressure on
you. It's not that good.
Okay.
I mean, it's great. It's the best.
It's great. Okay. Here we go.
Howdy, folks. DJ Spokane got here. I host a music show called The Astral Range every Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. on this here community radio station, KYRS. For each week's show, I'll take listeners on a curated journey from the homespun folk selections,
building up to a sky-minded plateau of psychedelic terrain,
then down the mountainside to base camp. Talking frontal lobe levitation, cerebellum sizzle,
medulla modulation,
and other forms of brain bubbling. Tune into The Astral Range, Fridays, 6 to 8 p.m. on KYRX 88.1 and 92.3 FM.
Hey, this is DJ Downlow from Inside the Hype Radio. Thousands of people choose KYRS as their radio station every week, and we want you to be a part of our family. Just text GIVE KYRS to the number 44321 and make KYRS your radio station.
This is your KYRS live and local calendar for November 22nd through the 26th. Friday, Hannah Boundy, Brittany Holden, and many others at Bear Totem, Table and Tankard, Vika, Jacob Maxwell, and others at the Jaguar Room and the Chameleon, Datura and Cruel Velvet at Mootsie's, Hayes Noble at the Big Dipper, Mr. Sister at Zola, and Undercard, Jacob Van Now, the Colorflies, and Zach Pass at Jackson Street. Saturday, the Orpho Duo at the Plant Project, Corey Aileen at Huckleberry's, E.J. Warland, Blake Braley, and Tristan Hart-Pierce at the Chameleon, Time Baby at Hamilton Studio, Malachi Burrow and Caitlin Wines at Zola, and Sun Real at the District. Sunday, the Spokane Guitar Collective at Hamilton Studio and Sugar Bear at Zola. Monday, the Gonzaga Symphony at the Myrtle Woldson Performing Arts Center and Open Mic with 29 Product and Ben 10 at the Red Room. Monday and Tuesday, Open Jam at Jackson Street. For an entire hour of local musicians, tune into Sounds of Spokane every Sunday night at 8 on KYRS.
Spokane Civic Theater presents A Christmas Carol, December 18th, 7:30 p.m. Information online at SpokaneCivicTheater.com. You know, and that's my favorite kind of PSA. It's short, it's sweet. It was a good one. And now we're going to do our underwriting announcements. Out and About receives support from Boots Bakery and Lounge, specializing in vegan bistro fare and gluten-free baked goods. Located in the Saranac Commons, 19 West Main Street, open 7 a.m. through 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. through 5 p.m. Sundays. Full menu and information at bootsbakery.com. Out and About receives support from KSPS's PBS TV Inland Session Series. Every Monday at 7:30 p.m. on KSPS, PBS Channel 7.1, and streaming at kspS.org. Inland Session episode archive and podcast featuring extended interviews and stripped-down performances available at kspS.org/inlandsessions. All right, we are back. You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane. I'm still experiencing difficulties with my computer as far as playing music for you, but that's okay because I've got my friend Matt, and Matt Danielson, who's the executive director of Spokane Pride, and we are talking, doing some post-election talk. And so, Matt, we left you. We were going to tell a story, and then I said stop, and now you're going to tell it.
Yeah. No, I was just going to. Don't think it's on, is it?
Yeah, I'll maybe turn up your headphone probably.
Okay, there we go.
Okay.
Yeah, I know, you just got me thinking about my honeymoon, actually.
Okay.
Because the debate was on my honeymoon, and me and my husband were in Twin Falls, Idaho, you know, kind of rural Idaho. Yeah. And we went to a small theater with a bunch of old liberals and watched the debate together. And it was the most raucous time. It was so, everybody was so excited. It was, I don't know. I just think it's so fun to be in a, you know, I get the same feeling sometimes at like Prides in North Idaho or something. It's just like everybody's so happy to be together and kind of like unified.
And starve for some good news, I'm sure, too. What do you think we're going to do about this as far as Spokane Pride and Spokane? What can we do to kind of, do we just have to wait and see what comes down the line, or are there things we can be doing right now?
I mean, I can tell you what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, that'd be good.
That's, just getting together with other community leaders and just kind of checking on each other, being there for each other, and also kind of assessing what everybody's feeling is on what to do, because I don't think it's Pride's place necessarily to make any big action, but yeah. Pride's really good at throwing events and, you know, getting people together.
Right.
So that's kind of where I see my place, and then kind of going from there.
Yeah. I think, you know, for me, it's been, I'm reading this book right now. It's called, what was it called? They Didn't Know. Oh, shoot. Why am I blanking on the name of the book? They Thought They Were Free. That's the name of the book. They Thought They Were Free. And it was written in 1955. And it's about this, and it's a true story. It's a guy who goes back and he winds up, World War II, goes to Germany to interview people who are members of the Nazi Party. And they still kind of think, you know, Hitler did some great stuff, that kind of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And they really didn't know what was going on. And they kind of just lapsed. They kind of slowly slid into this thing. And before they realized it, it was like everything had changed. And it was little things, like he was telling a story about the police officer who was told by the chief of police, and this police officer is supposed to retire in like 3 years. The chief of police tells him, you need to go take so-and-so, who's a Jewish man, into protective custody because they just burned the synagogue down. So we need to protect him, supposedly. So you need to round him up. And, you know, this police officer knows something is up. That's not really the case. And he goes and he gets his friend and takes him to prison, you know, basically. Yeah. And he is, and so I guess what the point I'm getting at is that it's really easy for people to slide into a bad place in these kind of things.
No, I was listening to a podcast today, actually, and I think the expression they said was things happen slowly until they happen fast. So, I mean, we can kind of set things in motion and then suddenly things start to happen, and it's like a, you know, frog boiling in water.
Yeah. And I could see that. And, you know, one thing too, I've been reading about is that how you should not really capitulate to fascist forces. You need to make them work for what they want. You don't all of a sudden say, so you've got, you know, Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski who go to Mar-a-Lago basically to say, hey, you know, let's start all over here, Mr. Trump. And it's like they've been calling this guy a Nazi for like a year. And now all of a sudden everything's fine. And it's like, well, that's capitulation. And I think that Jack Smith, I'm sure I've been as a prosecutor, I've been really following him, and he seems to be kind of like the anti Merrick Garland. But, you know, to drop those charges without prejudice, to me, it's he should have made him work for it. He should have said, nope, the charges stand. And then they take it to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court says, no, they don't stand anymore. But make people say who they are.
Yeah. No, I don't know much about that particular thing, but I know the MSNBC hosts you were talking about, I think that's going to be another death rattle for MSNBC, especially with the restructuring of that organization as well. It's not going to be able to compete anymore, just because, I mean, I think people are losing a lot of faith, somewhat justifiably, in a lot of these institutions, and
yeah,
you know, people don't really know what to believe. And then a bunch of people are tuning into you know, podcast news and alternative media, and some of that's like, a lot of that's not even better. So we just kind of need a new paradigm on how we disseminate and absorb information.
Well, and you know, I think, you know, Joe Rogan the other day declared basically that people are turning away. The reason MSNBC is in trouble is because it was too liberal and people are tired of liberals telling them the way things are. But I think that he really, as usual, missed the actual punchline to this thing. And that is that this sane washing and making everything look like a horse race to keep your ratings up is, people aren't going to buy into that anymore. I mean, it makes you go crazy when you see this happening in front of your face, that this guy, you watch a clip on a comedy show or on a radio show, you listen to a clip of President Trump, just obviously nuts. You watch the debate, he's nuts. And then you wind up, the media doesn't want to talk about it because they need it to be a horse race. And I think that's the message I would take away. And I would think that's why people are turning away from traditional media. I think people who watch Fox News are going to keep watching Fox News. Mm-hmm. But, you know, because that's a propaganda channel and they enjoy that. But the other two, I think MSNBC and CNN are probably going to be done.
Yeah. I think that's definitely true, especially in the long term. And, you know, it's just a matter of when. I don't know. I have conflicted feelings about a lot of it because I do feel sometimes we have a marketing issue on our side too, and not the, and I don't know. I just don't feel the love sometimes. And that's what I really try to do with Pride, is try to focus on the love and what, you know, what brings us together. And I don't know what's going to happen with any of that stuff, but I know Pride is going to be bigger than it's ever been, and we're going to have more energy in our community, and I think we're going to create, you know, a stronger community out of this and resist locally, and, you know, we're going to create more prides in Northern Idaho, and, you know, just try to, I don't know.
Well, I think 8 years ago for me was the time. You know, I was still in the fire department and I had started transitioning, but I wasn't out yet. You know, it wasn't like there wasn't going to be much of a question about it because, you know, I was already, you know, with the hormones and stuff, it was going to be pretty obvious. But it really made me double down on coming out. It was like it would have killed me if I had stayed closeted and I saw people being persecuted for what I am, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I think I remember your coming out party.
Yeah, you were there.
Because I think the first time first or second time we met.
It would have probably been.
I was bartending at 9 and you had the fire chief there. Yeah. You had a whole bunch of, I don't know. At least officially, from an outward perspective, it seemed like you were well received at that time.
Yeah, well, I was, and you know, and I think a lot of that is, you know, I was good at my job, and I was a person that people liked to work with, and you know, that's you know, hopefully, you know, you get a lot of those kind of people that come out, you know, that are good at their jobs and people like to be with them, you know, because. Being a trans person was never like the number one thing about me. It was just, it's just a thing. It's not, doesn't define me, you know? And I think that that's an important thing too. I like to do things for my community and my family. And, you know, I like to create and all those things, like all of us.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know. I think that kind of really hits it back there. The people knew you.
Yeah.
And that's what's really important, is that, you know, we just need to come out, show people who we are, not go back into the closet or anything. But, you know, 'cause it's really easy to hate like a sound bite from Fox News or something, that where they're cherry picking from some ridiculous thing. Yeah. But like your neighbor, your friend, somebody you already know, like that's what's really important.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's the thing with the trans stuff that they really spent. I think somebody told me it was like $300 million they spent on these,
the They Them ads.
Yeah. The They Them ads. And it was like, you know, that's the problem is that there's so few trans people as a percentage. You know, that's fine, but it makes it really harder for people to know a trans person. Mm-hmm. And then when they start doing things against trans people, the government, then it's like Trump's going to probably kick out trans service people out of the military again. That's probably going to happen. Mm-hmm. That's what I've read anyways. And it would make sense that he would do that. But it's like, you know, it's such a small amount of people that people go, well, it's just, you know, who cares, you know? But it's like, well, it's important to those people. And actually, it's important to our country's defense because these are, you know, these are fighter pilots and mm-hmm. generals and, you know, they're people who are really important to the military, and they're going to boot them out just for who they are, you know? And I think there will be empathy around that, and logical people will say, well, that's, you know, not right. But again, there's people that I know, once somebody was really close to me who, you know, I asked how he said he couldn't vote for Trump because he was very much, he didn't like Trump. He had voted for him the first time. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, after the election, he calls me up and he's like, yeah, can you believe that? And I'm like, believe what? He goes, that Trump won. And I'm like, well, yeah. I said, did you vote for Harris? Well, no, I couldn't agree with her policies. I'm like, so why does it surprise you that he won? So I eventually went on to say, you know, if there was somebody who was running for president who was going to persecute you, possibly risk your life, and that his opponent was going to do the opposite and was going to help you, I would have voted for his opponent even if there were policy differences. And I go, but that, you know, that's just me. But so, you know, you think that there's going to be people who will stand with you, but when people can't even vote for somebody that's close for, you know, close to them, and they say they love them, and they can't even vote for the person that's going to stand up for them and hates the other candidate, you know, it's like, to me, it's like, well, that's just doesn't bode well for us, I think.
Yeah. Seems like a disconnect to say the least.
Well, and it's also being a part of a cult in a way too. And, you know, I think everybody wants to belong. And so if your social group was really pro Trump and you were a person that, did not like him, when they asked, who did you vote for? You could say not for Harris, you know, and then you would still be a part of this social group, you know? And I think that's part of it too.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think humans inherently have a part of them that need to like categorize us versus them.
Yeah.
My team versus your team. I'm still trying to figure out, you know, why people identify so heavily with sports teams and stuff. And I think this is kind of that same, you know, reflex, that same part of just humanity and, you know, just kind of used in this kind of wild way to, you know, just kind of take over.
Yeah. I did find myself feeling kind of hopeless about the whole thing, but.
Oh yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I tried to stay. I went to a LGBTQ+ seniors group meeting the day after the election because, you know, the leader of that was just so worried that they were going to be just, you know, despondent and just not. And I'm like, I don't know. I feel like it was just kind of a microcosm of what I've been doing in this whole thing. Just being like, you know, we're going to organize, we're going to be stronger, we're going to, you know, trying to put a positive spin on it.
Yeah.
Because sometimes that's all you can do.
Well, and you know, and I'm talking because I feel like we're just talking in private here. I forget that we're broadcasting that, you know, but in public, I will not give them any fear or any anger or any mm-hmm. sorrow, any of that, because I think they, you know, whatever you want to call this dark force, it feeds on it. And when I go out running, even if I'm really hurting when I'm running, as far as like, how, you know, this is painful, I've got the biggest smile on my face because I want to be seen as a happy person because I don't want them to think that they have caused me any pain.
Yeah, no, we just got to keep buckling down and doing our thing. At least in my case, I know there's other people out there with a different experience, but like as a person that, you know, takes on organizing pride, I already have so much to do.
And yeah. We have
50 events throughout the year. And I don't know, just try to keep spreading the love, keep building community and, you know, hope I can be a part of, you know, organizing the community a little bit in my small way.
Well, you know, that is a good feeling. Like, when I got involved with that, Running for My Life video project, I felt like, well, I gave money to the campaigns, you know, that I supported, but I also did something with my hands and with my brain, you know, to help.
That was the January 6th one, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I remember that.
Yeah. So, you know, it's good when you can do those things, you know. I feel like if I was still in the union, I'd be taking some solace in that while I'm getting, you know, I'm working for the union and I'm helping working people and all that. I think that would have been good too. But yeah, you know, right now I find myself writing a lot more, writing short stories around this issue. And then also every night, watch Hogan's Heroes.
Okay. Well, I was with you up until there.
Well, see, you would have really loved this because some of the songs I was going to play were, Hogan's Heroes songs that the cast from the Hogan's Heroes, it was called like Hogan's Heroes Sing the Hits of World War II.
Oh my.
But it's funny, but it's for me when I watch it, and it's a great show too, because it's some of the episodes are very funny and some are kind of dumb, but I think on the surface, you might think, oh, this is kind of glorifying Nazis, but it's not, because everybody who's associated with the show, except for Colonel Hogan and Bob Crane, a whole different story, but they were all Jewish. Mm-hmm. Colonel Kling's Jewish, General Burke.
Oh, like in real life?
In real life, yeah. Oh, okay. And then, in fact, LeBeau was in a concentration camp. He was Jewish and was going to be executed, but the war ended before they could get to him. And so all these characters, and I think, you know, they put on this Nazi uniform and they perform comedy. And when I watch it, I just think, you know, they're Nazis. They're really dumb in this show. And I think our Nazis are kind of the same. They're not too bright for the most part. And when we're listening and this book, They Thought They Were Free, it really comes through that so many of the low-level apparatus people were like, you know, failed tailor, failed banker, you know, just down the line, people who just couldn't. And I think maybe felt like they were owed something. And I think maybe that's where some of these folks come today, is they, I want to be a social influencer and be a millionaire. But gosh, that's not working out. This is not fair. I want something, you know, why is she making millions of dollars on YouTube? And I think that people have real unreal expectations about what life is really about.
Oh yeah. No, we live lives of comparing ourselves to, you know, the top 0.01% of people that, you know, have all the exposure and don't even realize that we're the normal ones and can't even be, you know, grateful for the fact that we're normal.
Right.
Because honestly, like, would you want to have 10 million followers or something?
Yeah, no.
I know. I feel during Pride season, I'm about as famous as I'd ever like to
you
be.
Are. You are.
You know, for better and for worse. And like, you know, that just kind of comes with a
You're
whole
lot.
You're
the most wanted man in Spokane that morning.
If in some ways, yeah. It's
Where's Matt? I'm sure that's what people have.
That's what my phone says. It rings about 60 times a day during May and June.
Yeah.
But no, I just think we, and then we like, you know, get insecure about the fact that we're not, you know, this, you know, top 0.01% person and just can't even be grateful for what we have. And the fact that we live in this time in the Pacific Northwest in this beautiful place and like, you know, I know our community has some problems, but we have a beautiful community.
We're surrounded by lovely people in this town, in this city.
And like, why can't we just, you know, I mean, I have the same problem. Trust me. Like I, especially when I'm doing events or something, because often I see, you know, not the best in people occasionally because, you know, there's just when you're doing something big, there's always stuff that happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, why can't we just, you know, realize that we're actually really lucky.
Yeah, we are.
Despite the stuff that I can't say on a, you know, public radio.
Yeah. Right. And so how do you keep your sanity, Matt, during this?
Well, fortunately we're the same that we both have creative outlets.
Yeah.
And mine's more of going home and, you know, getting really unplugged and, you know, sitting at my piano with my microphone and just like improvising for hours at a time and just kind of seeing what happens and ending up writing songs about, you know, culture, love, street preachers, the Bible. Most of my music is kind of processing a lot of the craziness in life.
Right. And your music is lovely.
Lovely
music.
I pretend that nobody's heard it. So I did think since the election.
I did think since the election,
I'm like, I have some ones that are pretty applicable to this situation.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I feel like I think I need to be better about sharing, you know, my creation. Then I'm even going to like probably work a little more with my band to actually produce some of the music. And, you know, because not that my music will change the world, but I do think, you know, creativity harness, especially like yours, mine, everyone's.
Yeah.
Like somebody's going to create something that's going to change the world.
Well, and it's also just the little things, you know, just these little incremental pushes. You don't know how your art's going to affect one person and maybe make their day a little bit better and maybe think about their circumstances a little bit more. And
yeah, and the song that I think the last one I shared was, I literally wrote it after a 30 minute conversation with that a-hole street preacher that I literally saw him today.
Oh yeah.
And just because he just trying to process what he thinks love is, because he literally thinks him screaming hate at people is love.
Yeah.
And I just cannot get over how diametrically opposed that is from the words of Jesus.
Yeah.
So I just don't, it had to become a song because it's so wildly inconsistent from how I see the Bible.
Well, and you know, and I think that you and I both have religious background, and I think that I certainly have been finding more solace in that, I would say, lately. And
more solace in your religious background?
Mm-hmm.
Are you practicing anything at all?
Or? Not, you know, because my background is being Catholic, and they're not going to let me, don't want me at their church, you know, and I that's actually my master's degree was in pastoral ministry.
Oh,
and
I forget that.
Yeah. And, you know, so I'm kind of doing a little bit of a search around that right now, because I do feel like it'd be good to be a part of a community again.
Well, I think we still have those parts of human nature, whether we have the weekly religious services with it or not.
It's ingrained.
And that's one of the things I'd like, and I think that is, you know, not to pivot back to Pride, but I do think that is a function that Pride can potentially serve, is creating these, you know, events every week. For example, we had queer documentary screenings several weeks in a row at 9. And it wasn't a huge group of people. We'd have like 15 or 20 people.
That's good. That's a good group.
We would watch the documentaries, and after each one, we would sit there and we'd just like lead a group. Everybody would talk, almost everybody in the room would talk about their feelings and how it landed and how they, I've done so many events. But this felt so special just being in a group like that on a Sunday afternoon, just, you know, chatting with some people, you know, really well, some people you don't know at all. And just like really getting to know people. And I think that's something, you know, that communal feeling, that getting together and singing together. I mean, singing in a group releases oxytocin.
Yeah, and I believe it.
We need to create institutions and structures like that in our culture, so we can, you know, be one together, and you know, just be happier. Because I don't think a lot of our mental health crisis is not just an individual crisis. It's a crisis of how we interact, because, you know, we are so connected. I mean, I forget the Albert Einstein quote, but it's like, it's something to the effect that the illusion is that we're not connected to each other. We're so much more connected than we can possibly even see. And, you know, there's just, that is deeply psychologically true. And we need to figure out a way in this modern culture to kind of like deal with those intrinsic human needs.
Yeah, I would agree. And
so you're going to come to my Pride Church.
Pride Church. Yeah, okay. All right. You know, just keep me posted on Church.
I'll keep you posted.
Okay. Because, you know, it's, I think about like baptismal vows and oaths of office that I took, you know, and marital vows and all those things. And it's like, sometimes, you know, I think that sometimes you can think, well, those are like restrictions in your life. But really, I think that they can also be a very fundamental to survival and to thriving and to give you purpose.
It's meaning and responsibility. And sometimes that comes with a commitment like that, which is what those are. I mean, and I do think we've become disconnected from, you know, cultural institutions like that. Even like, you know, I got married, I think 2 months ago, and I don't know. I didn't think much of it, like leading into it, because I'm like, oh great, another event to plan. But then it happens, and it's like, no, this is meaningful, and it's meaningful because of the act of doing it. It's meaningful because of the group that you do it in communion with, you know, secular communion, obviously. But like, it, I don't even know where I'm going with that, but you know, things matter like this, and I feel like we've gotten to a place where things are kind of losing their meaning a little bit. And I think that's probably feeding into a lot of the, you know, full circle back to the political issues, because it doesn't seem like anything matters.
I know. And I think that, or we've seen the truth. Well, you know, I forget how many lies, 40,000 lies or whatever last
fake time
he was president. It was just an incredible amount. And now, you know, they saw that they weren't going to take like an ethics pledge. And I go, well, I'm kind of glad they don't, because it kind of cheapens the pledge, you know. We know what you're about, and so you don't need to do this, and let's not cheapen this pledge or this constitutional swearing in, you know. Let's not even do that, because like, just really denigrates the whole process.
Yeah. No, it just seems to have harnessed fear on a massive scale. And
yeah,
I don't know.
Wait, you know, one thing too, like this, and we got to go here in a second, but like this Nancy Mace business where she's got letting the trans congresswoman use the ladies' room. And now, of course, there's all these trans men who are stepping up saying, well, biological sex, I've got a beard, I got huge hurkin muscles, I guess I'll be using the ladies' room. And
I support that behavior.
I just think that's funny. And I go, well, what would be, if I went there, what would be, which bathroom would I use for the most? I mean, I would want to use the ladies' room, but if I was following their law, I wouldn't. And would I go into the men's room and make everybody uncomfortable? I mean, you know, it's like, it's just I don't know.
Who wants to micromanage bathroom? That's
well, and this Nancy Mace was a big, apparently an LGBT supporter of some.
Oh, no, she's raising money off of it. You saw AOC's response, yeah. Probably.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Pretty epic.
Yeah, you know, flock the fleece. Okay, well, Matt, I think that's it. That's it. We've got time for. We don't have music. Going to have any music. I didn't do my 40-minute after the hour stuff because.
Oh, wow. It's already almost 5.
Somebody told me that the Dana says I don't have to do these 40-minute breaks if I'm doing a talk show. So we'll see. You know, so I'm going to take advantage of that today.
So you just had to hear way too much about our feelings.
I know. Well, hopefully, you know, people know you're not alone. They're not alone out there. We're all going to get through this, or maybe not, but we'll all be together, whatever happens.
Yeah, and come by the Sand Pride Center if you want to spend Thanksgiving with us.
That's good.
Be
nice SpokanePride.org, I believe.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that works.
All right, thanks everybody for listening. You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane.
Dogs. By the way, Lutnick himself is in line to profit from the corporate feeding frenzy he's now staffing. He is invested in everything from healthcare profiteers to cryptocurrency flimflams. And while he's been doing Trump's work, he's simultaneously been pushing Congress to do favors for his personal holdings. But, he insists, there is no conflict of interest in his efforts. After all, he explains with a straight face, he holds his government policy meetings in separate rooms from his own business pleadings. This is Jim Hightower saying, and that paper-thin wall of separation is Donald Trump's new ethical standard for protecting us from raw corporate greed. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you subscribers to Jim Hightower's Lowdown on Substack. Find us at jimhightower.substack.com.
You are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane. Best heard on 88.1 or 92.3 on your FM dial.
KYRS Medical Lake and K222BG Dartford, 88.1 FM, 92.3 FM, Thin Air Community Radio.
The following program was pre-recorded.
Is Democracy Now.
The country as a whole is paralyzed, and we wanted to finish this and to have a ceasefire. Hopefully tonight, by tonight, we'll have this ceasefire.
As calls grow for a ceasefire in Lebanon, we'll look at how Israel used U.S. weapons to kill 3 Lebanese journalists last month in what Human Rights Watch has called an apparent war crime. We'll go to Beirut. Then we speak to the head of Amnesty International USA about the group's call for President Biden to grant clemency to Native American leader Leonard Peltier, who has spent nearly half a century in prison.
Yeah, would allow me to put up a defense and manufactured evidence, manufactured witnesses, tortured witnesses.
And then, I Am Ready, Warden, a new short documentary about the execution of death row prisoner John Henry Ramirez.
John asked me, would you be my godmother? He is just not that person he was then.
Due process was done. Now we're changing our moral judgment.
What will you gain if I die, if I sink into the grave?
You're going to just forgive and that's it? He should pay for what he did.
I made the most changes I could. I bettered myself as much as I could, and that's enough.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's military is continuing to bomb southern Lebanon and the capital, Beirut, even as Israel's security cabinet